Are we live now?
I'm recording.
You're listening to Mumbrella Cast.
Mumbrella Cast.
Welcome to Mumbrella Cast. I'm Josie Tutty, and joining me today is Abigail Dawson, who covers our advertising and comms beat.
Hi, Jose.
Also with me is our senior media reporter, Zoe Samios.
Hello.
And our news editor, Paul Warbank.
Hi, Jesse.
Plus, our guest this week is Accenture's Michael Buckley, who will be joining Tim and Abby to discuss bridging the creative and consultancy divide.
So the two came together very seamlessly.
The marketing strategies of the future.
It's only possible through blockchain technology.
Retaining trust in a programmatic world.
Yeah, well, we definitely don't. We're not here to arbitrage media. That's a key differentiator.
So to the week's topics.
Kyle Sanderlands makes a bid to be the next Judge Judy.
120 jobs lost as News Corp and Fairfax enter shared printing press agreement.
SBS CEO and Managing Director Michael Abid steps down.
And we review some bad ads. So this week, Kyle Sanderlands announced he would be returning to our television screens in a Judge Judy-style show called, you guessed it, Trial by Kyle. As far as I understand it, people will come in with their arguments and Kyle will attempt to solve it. Anyway, this is how he described it live on air on Wednesday.
It's called Trial by Kyle.
Okay, good. Like that.
Now, people will come in with their stupid arguments, neighbourhood disputes. Maybe some girl got a tit job and she wants to sue her doctor because it's a botched job.
Oh, okay. Would you be seeing her boobies on it? I don't think
I'll ask her to take her boobs out.
Okay, fair enough.
You never know. Who knows?
Zoe, Kyle has had a rocky relationship with Channel 10, who will be broadcasting the show. Do you think they've gotten over their bad blood?
Well, I'm not quite sure. I did some digging around and Beverly McGarvey, who's the chief content officer at 10, was around in 2006. So she's been around forever and I'm assuming she was somewhat involved in the firing of Kyle back then, which was to do with an incident on Today FM. He was basically fired after a lie detector segment on Today FM, which went badly wrong, and a 14-year-old girl was revealed as a rape victim live on air. So it was pretty horrific at the time. There was a ruling, which you can look at online, and after that, that was sort of the end of Kyle's relationship with 10. He later went on to Channel 7. He did a number of TV shows. He was a judge on, I think, Australia's Got Talent. He also did his own TV show, which was Night with the Stars, which wasn't so successful. But I think if we're talking about whether or not they've gotten over bad blood, maybe it's just been enough time now that he's ready to go back on air. And to be honest, I think this show could possibly work more so than anything else that he's done previously before.
Now, Kyle and Jackie O are the top radio show in Australia, essentially across most markets. Is that right? Yeah. Why does he seem to do so much better on radio than on TV? Does he simply have a face for radio?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, he's one of the most successful across markets in that he is a Sydney breakfast radio show host, but he's got one of the highest shares, definitely on the FM bandwidth, so not including Alan Jones. You know, in Australia, he's always been really successful in that. I don't know if it's potentially that it's a radio thing. I think he's just found a loyal following through radio. He's been around forever. There's people that love to hate him, love to be shocked by him. It's always worked for him. And that bounce off with Jackie O Henderson, his co-host, has always worked really well on radio. They've got great chemistry there. So I'm not sure if it's, you know, specific to radio. It's just he's been in radio for the longest period of time. I don't know if, you know, a 7:30 p.m. audience always resonated with his controversial remarks. I think the radio people, the people that listen to him on radio, you know, they sign up for it. They know what they're going to get. I think there's a lot of people that don't listen to him. They're not in Sydney that probably were like, wow, that's a lot.
I think, too, there's that difference in format, too, the difference in medium, that radio is very, very different to television. We've seen this over the years that radio stars haven't done very well in moving across. You mentioned Alan Jones just before, and there's John Laws too, back in his heyday in the 1980s or 90s. He struggled with that move. And of course, we had that magnificent flaming out of Doug Mulray in the 1980s, where Kerry Packer pulled him off air during a show because he was just so offended by it. So we have had this in the past where radio stars just haven't had that star power go across to television.
But in this case, I mean, it's one episode and we didn't get confirmation from 10, but they are launching a pilot week, so we can only assume that it's part of that. But Kyle likes being center of attention, and Kyle likes to be quite judgy. He said it himself. This is very different to a singing or dancing show. If there was something that would work for Kyle on television, I think this could be it.
Is he the really the best person to be giving advice to Australia?
Potentially not, but I don't think people care. I think people, as I said, love to hate him, and he's going to cause controversy no matter what. So even if his advice is wrong or people disagree with it, I think people will watch in sort of a fury or an anger or frustration at him, and that could work.
I'll certainly be interested to look at the ratings. So next, Fairfax Media and News Corp have announced that they'll be sharing printing presses in a bid to save costs. Zoe, am I right in saying up to 120 staff members, both permanent and casuals, will be affected by this?
That's our understanding, yeah. So we're not sure whether or not they'll be redeployed. Obviously, as is the case with most redundancies at Fairfax, they do attempt to move people into roles within the business where they can. I believe they did the same when the joint venture ended with HuffPost. But it could be up to 120 staff members, which is quite a significant amount, probably not their biggest set of potential redundancies, but sizable nonetheless. And the agreement will also see the closure of two print press sites. News Corp's been unaffected by this. It's worth noting that. So they've made it very clear that no staff will be affected in theirs. The agreement is that Fairfax will use News Corp sites and will shut two of theirs. And Fairfax Media CEO and Managing Director Greg Hywood said the new arrangements would result in a full-year benefit of approximately $15 million, which for Fairfax Media is sizable. They've been looking to cut costs for a number of time, and this is a way to do it that doesn't involve affecting the quality of the content that they're producing.
And do you think the history between News Corp and Fairfax is going to get in the way here? Is there going to be issues with these massive companies working together?
Not necessarily. I mean, it's a commercial arrangement, and it works in the UK with different papers, you know, using the same print services. I think this isn't a case of them sharing stories or anything like that. This is literally just using the same printing services. To be honest, I'm surprised it didn't happen sooner. I know that Greg Hywood had flagged it for a couple of years, and he had definitely talked about, you know, how they could save money there. And it is a way to do it without, you know, sacrificing the content, as I said before.
So this story did quite well on our site, and there's been quite a lot of comments on it. Quite a few suggesting this could be a sign of the beginning of the end for print in Australia. Is this a bit over the top?
I think so. I definitely don't think it's the end of print as we know it. If anything, this is a bid to sustain print for as long as possible. You know, I remember at the end of last year, The Guardian in the UK relaunched with a tabloid format for their print publication. So The Guardian in Australia obviously is only digital. The Guardian in the UK actually has a print edition. They had reduced that and outsourced printing to Trinity Mirror instead of compromising the quality of their content. So I don't think this is a case of this is the end of print. This is a case of we'd like it to survive as long as possible, and we are looking to save money where we can. The AFR's media and marketing editor, Max Mason, did a follow-up with Greg Hywood, his boss, or his very big boss, who said he saw a very long future for seven-day-a-week printing. And he pointed out that News and Fairfax, when they're competing, it's really around content and advertising. It's not about the physical production and distribution of these papers. It's not about that. So I don't think we're going to see some sort of mad consolidation of the newspapers or anything like that. I think this is a genuine attempt to save the wider industry. It's good to see the two major publishers working together on this.
And it's interesting too, we've got a comment on that story from somebody claiming to be a former Fairfax production executive who says that this was being kicked around 6 or 7 years ago. And again, 7 years ago, we had 1,900 redundancies when Fairfax shut down its Chullora and Tullamarine print works, which had been built a decade earlier at a massive amount of money. So yeah, we have been here before on this, but it seems to be a steady decline, a steady fading away of the medium rather than the catastrophic end of days.
So this week, SBS CEO and Managing Director Michael Abeed announced he was stepping down after 7.5 years at the helm. Paul, your thoughts on this one?
Well, it was a shot out of the blue. We didn't really expect it, and it was announced. And it comes at a time of a whole range of reshuffles in a lot of media companies around Australia.
And SBS said it will commence the search for Abid's replacement immediately. Have we got any thoughts on contenders for his replacement?
It's hard to say. I mean, there's obviously what SBS is looking for is, and to Michael's credit, he was a very well-liked CEO. The employees really warmed to him, and he had a lot of responsibilities. He's obviously quite involved with the government as well. So it will be a hard role to replace. I'm not sure whether they do something internally, like bringing their new head of content, John Sintris, up the ranks. That's a possibility. I'm not quite sure whether John would be interested in that or whether SBS is even looking at that. I think when you're looking at potential candidates, you always look at the loopholes in market, the gaps. We talked about domain for a really long time, and all of a sudden Jason Pellegrino, Google's managing director, is over as the new CEO of domain. One of the obvious ones that's in market at the moment is obviously the resignation of MCN's CEO, Anthony Fitzgerald, which was announced yesterday. I'm not sure if Anthony would be up for a job like that. I know that he has a passion for TV, but it might not be the right fit for him. The other option is that they poach someone from another company, which looks like something that they might have to do given there's not a lot of people around. But I would say that the most interesting thing is where Michael is probably going to next. Michael obviously said he'd be announcing his new role in a few weeks, and I think it's fair to say that he was really waiting out for the end of the World Cup to announce his departure. I don't feel like he just all of a sudden was like, hurrah, I'm out. I think that was sort of a waiting game. And there is a slot open at Google.
And the timing on that, on his departure from SBS, is really exquisite as well, because the World Cup has been a triumph for SBS. And then the streaming strategy that he's been running with Handmaid's Tale and various other things, that's been a pretty good success rate there. So he goes out very much on a high there.
And obviously he introduced Viceland during his time. He has had quite a string of successes, despite the fact that SBS still isn't one of the bigger players in, when you look at the TV ratings, they're never one of the bigger players. But I definitely feel like there's been sort of a string of wins for SBS.
And I don't think they ever want to be the biggest as well. They've got a quota to obviously meet a diversity quota, and I think they do a really good job of that. They definitely have a role in the broadcasting space, but I wouldn't say that they'd ever. I think what you know, Michael's done is really build out what they're doing without trying to, you know, be the best, be number one or anything like that. And he's done a really good job, and I haven't heard anyone say a bad word about him. He's really well liked with internally and externally, and wherever he goes next, I'm sure that, you know, everyone will be happy to have a very, very warming and welcoming boss.
Well, we'll be keeping an eye out. Okay, so now it's time for a new segment that I have just invented called Bad Ads, because we have two contenders this week and I just wanted to get them both out there. First is a Schwarzkopf campaign. The ad features TV host Carissa Walford recalling life's key milestones, including getting drunk, falling in love, attending funerals and suffering through relationship breakdowns. And at the end, she realizes that all of her memories are hair related. Sadly, since this is an audio podcast, we won't be able to bring you the visuals, but here's a short clip to give you an idea of what we're talking about.
My first memory was my hair. Come to think of it, all my memories are hair related. When Mum was my whole world. When I first fought back.
You're Westie!
When I hoped I was doing it right. When I found out I wasn't much of a drinker.
I'll take you home.
When I gave in to love.
So, Abby, what's wrong with this one?
Where do I start? I'm calling it. I'm calling it the worst ad of the year.
Bold claim.
It's a bold claim, but after having watched it many, many times, it does just get worse and worse each time. I think to start with, I think probably where they went wrong is letting the brand and the influencer create this campaign. So there wasn't an agency used. It was Schwarzkopf. I too have trouble pronouncing that brand, Schwarzkopf and the influencer Carissa Walford, who's a TV host on Channel V, the music channel. And I think that was probably the first mistake. I think the second mistake, which one of our Twitter followers pointed out when the ad aired, he said that it looks like it's glorifying suicide. I think the issue I have with that in this ad is the fact that it's this girl standing on the edge of a cliff.
A very high cliff.
Mm. Very high cliff, reflecting on the highs and lows of her life, to which at the end, I will note, she does willingly fall backwards off the cliff, but she does fall off this cliff, reflecting on all these things that have happened in her life.
She does appear to be alive.
She does.
Once she lands in the water in her beautiful dress, but it is still a bit icky.
I think they've Googled the ad standards rulings there, because in ad standings they would say if she wasn't seen swimming away, probably would be banned. But in this case, I probably think that it may not be, because she is seen swimming away after she falls quite a distance onto her back in the water.
We'll keep an eye out for the ad standards board's rulings on that one.
It is interesting, though, looking at it, you really get a feel that it's a film school project, something that AFTAR's, an AFTAR student would be doing or something like that. It's that real feel about it.
I mean, again, I do think it is quite obvious that there wasn't an ad agency involved in this. You look at the longer version of the video, so the video is initially a one-minute version, and you look at the longer one, which was 5 minutes, and I'm going to be quite honest here and say it adds absolutely no value for an extra 4 minutes of content. It's just like that's the unedited version and here's the edited version. It's just every scene is longer. I really am slamming this ad, but
but to your point, Abs, you know, when a brand's going to learn, you think about the Pepsi ad from, what was it, last year or the year before, and it was just so off the mark. And you'd think that, you know, when people make mistakes, I think there was another one over in Asia, there was an ad that was bad, maybe for Dove. I'm not 100, I think it was Dove.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was. And again, just missing the mark consistently, you'd think that you'd look at these examples and make sure not to offend or completely be almost tone deaf, but it just keeps happening time and time again.
And finally, there's a bit of a weird one this week. We got a new McDonald's ad, which featured a dad driving around and around a McDonald's drive-thru in a bid to keep his baby asleep.
Why can I have a strong skin, mother?
Hello? Sir?
Strong skin latte, please.
Sorry, could you repeat that, please?
Cute, right? We thought so until a commenter shared a link to this US McDonald's ad made by TBWA in 2010.
I said an Egg McMuffin and a large cup of coffee.
Can you say that one more time, please?
McDonald's have since admitted that they did ask DDB to remake the old ad, but is trotting out old ideas ever good marketing practice?
Look, I think, you know, to start with, DDB and McDonald's remained relatively quiet on what had transpired, and our commenters definitely did fill in the gaps of, you know, DDB have ripped off TBWA and, you know, this is just a copy, blah, rah, rah, rah. I actually went to McDonald's earlier today and to DDB, and McDonald's have just come through with this statement now from Joe Feeney, McDonald's's Australia Director of Marketing, and she said, McDonald's is a global business, so of course we share great content between markets. This is a great piece of work that perfectly met the brief for this campaign. So, I mean, it would appear that McDonald's have asked DDB to repurpose an old ad from overseas. But, I mean, is that the right approach for McDonald's to be taking? I'm not totally sure.
I think it's better than what happened last year with Menulog, when you had a case of, you know, they recruited Jeff Goldblum for their first ad. It was Y&R Sydney was appointed to the creative account, and all of a sudden you've got this, people started to talk about this 2015 ad for Curry's PC World, which was done by Abbott Mead Vickers BBDO. And that's another agency and another piece of work for a completely different brand. It's exactly the same thing.
But I just think consumers don't know these things. A lot of consumers don't know the ins and outs of how ad agencies work and what they do and don't repurpose. So I think as a consumer, I mean, you think that a brand's getting lazy and just copying work from overseas. I think there needs to be some form of or some way of letting consumers know that this is a deliberate remake of an 8-year-old ad.
The question with that, though, is do consumers know? Do they care whether it's an 8-year-old US ad that's been repurposed? My favourite example of that is the Kangaroos Meat Pies and Holden Cars ad, which everyone of a certain age in Australia considers a legendary Australian ad, when in actual fact it was a knockoff of a South African radio ad by GMA, by General Motors, so in the 1960s. So, yeah, consumers, I don't think, really care about that as long as they like the message. Oh, there's a cute advert of a dad driving his baby around the block. How nice is that? I'm not convinced.
If consumers don't care, maybe this for you, Abs, if consumers don't care, what about, you know, the advertising agencies and the creators involved? Is it poor taste to do something like that?
But, I mean, I don't think they have a say a lot of the time. If your client's telling you that this is the ad that they want you to do, are you going to stand there and say no? Of course not. You're going to do what your client's telling you to do and what they want. I mean, I guess all DDB can do or any other agency can do is sort of put their own flavour on it and put their own spin on it to make it different enough.
Okay, I think that's all we've got time for today, but thanks guys for joining me. I'll let you get back to the news desk.
Thanks Josie.
So joining us this week on the Mumbrella Cast, we have Michael Buckley, Managing Director for Accenture Interactive in Australia and New Zealand. Michael has a career spanning 18 plus years in the advertising and media industry and currently manages three business units in Accenture Digital, including Accenture Interactive, Fjord and The Monkeys. Thanks for joining us, Michael.
Thank you, Abigail. Thanks, Tim.
So it's been about, I think, just over a year since Accenture Interactive acquired The Monkees. Is the culture different now as to when you acquired them?
The Monkees culture, no. I would say the Monkees culture is the same as it was. I'd say the Monkees culture, which was a nice thing to have, which is was very similar to Accenture Interactive's existing culture. So the two came together very seamlessly. And what's nice is that we've seen an increase in resumes from people wanting to join the business, and you know, you've seen some sort of key creative hires, if you like, that have come since the acquisition. So, yeah.
And was it hard merging those two cultures together? I mean, two sort of quite different businesses. Was it? Did you have to make an active effort to do that?
No, not culturally. Yeah, very, very similar. You know, like the businesses of Reactive and Fjord have been around a long time, and we all share that creative culture spirit, so no, not at all.
I suppose on that point, that's something I found myself sort of thinking about, sort of going early in your career. I mean, you had to make the decision yourself going from a digital agency to a consultancy.
Yeah.
And there's certainly a perception that consultancies are, you know, a bit more conservative, you know, the sort of clients are even more C-suite, et cetera. So
yeah.
What was the thought process for you before you made the leap across, and then when you did,
yeah,
was it as you expected?
For me, it was what Accenture brought to the table was the fact that it just had this incredible back end of technology, and my frustration at the time was I was delivering creative services and product design where I came from, but didn't have the true technology background, and it now is there in spades. And the irony is that when you speak to Mark and Justin and Scott from the Monkees, the reason they have a very similar reason for joining Accenture Interactive is because the two combined just bring such a powerful force. So, yeah, that's why I joined.
And how long was that going on for, that these conversations with the Monkees going on for behind the scenes before it was announced?
I don't know exactly, but I don't know, like, I don't know, a few months, let's say.
And what kind of interests me about the process, and this is something I've seen the Monkees talk about publicly in one or two spots, was how different the sort of conversation with the organisation was, with so much around of the focus around culture, staff retention, including how the monkey, you know, the founders are incentivized to stick around that metric. Yeah. Do you think the way that the consultancy world thinks about culture is different to if an agency was acquired by, say, another holding company?
I'm not sure about that. I think the reason that the monkeys wanted to join was we had this collective vision, right? And the vision is, how does brand promise and customer experience come together? So we live off this piece of research that says 80% of clients think that they drive a great customer experience, but the reality is that 8% of customers actually agree with that.
And so give us those stats again.
80% of clients think they deliver a great customer experience for their customers, but in reality, 8% of customers agree with that stat.
Wow.
And so the brand promise, if you like, comes from the idea that the monkeys create for our clients. And Fjord is also a business that creates, you know, the end state and rethinks about end products and services. And then the experience, right, is the sort of core part of Accenture Interactive, which has been always the content platforms and the commerce business. And so what we're trying to do is unify brand promise and customer experience together. And when you explain that to a client, they can see that, okay, I can actually see what you're trying to do from a business value to our end customer. And what we hope we're doing is actually bridging that gap.
And do you have clients that both Accenture Interactive and the monkeys work on collaboratively together?
Yes. When we acquired the monkeys, we had great synergy clients already, and we continue to do so. We're lucky enough that we're just one team, one culture, and we're able to do that for clients, and clients love that, yeah.
And how does that work in practice? You know, when I think about it, when you work on a client together,
yeah,
is it the monkeys take the lead on the creative stuff and then Accenture Interactive takes the lead sort of on the management business side of things, or is it more collaborative than that?
What we sort of have is sort of three doors to enter in. One thing I do note is that it's impossible to boil the ocean, right? We can't all go in there at the same time. And so the three doors are brand and communications. The second door is product and service design. And the third door is marketing, operations, and the platform delivery business. And when you break it down that to achieve that vision, a client can say, hey, I need one area more than another door. And so it simply says, hey, you may have come from the monkeys and are you now interested in marketing services or marketing operations, or are you interested in fixing your products? And so it's a very simple way for us to define that to the client.
Tom, this sort of alludes back to a conversation we had on Mumbrellacast a few weeks back when we had Adam Ferrier from Thinkabell on
yeah.
the podcast, and who they have as a sort of minority investor, PwC. And the question I was putting to him, which I'll put to you now as well, was it kind of came from talking to I was over in Singapore and was chatting to a CEO from one of the holding companies, mm-hmm. sort of, you know, with some APAC responsibilities. His theory was that the consultancies are treating Australia like a little bit of a Petri dish where they're putting their dipping their toes into the water of the media and marketing world a little more vigorously than perhaps is happening in other parts of the world.
Right.
And that Australia, a lot of these experiments are happening earlier than they are in other parts of the world. Do you recognise that view? Do you feel like you're a little bit ahead of the rest of the world?
From an Accenture point of view, I would say no.
Because of Kamarama.
Yeah, I mean, Rothko just won 3 Khan Awards.
And how about your competitive set?
What do you mean by that? Sorry.
They appear to be a little bit later to the game if you're talking about, you know, what was going on with the Deloittes or the PwCs. You know, their interest in this world seems to have come a couple of years later.
I just think that, you know, like even with sort of like the launch of programmatic services, right, that we've just done, what we needed was what clients loved about us originally was that we had this technology background. We don't come from another service, right? And so the technology core has allowed creative services to add to that so much more seamlessly. And I think that's been a massive advantage as we've launched new products and services where, you can see, like, and the reason that we buy these businesses, right, is what are the synergy deals? What are the synergy clients that come from buying those businesses? You've sold your business, Tim, recently, and ultimately it's what is the synergy that drives as a collective. And what's great about the businesses that we have acquired, like the Monkeys, is how does that work with the other services that we have, and does that connect? And I think our heritage and our technology background has been a massive advantage to us.
Now, I'm glad you mentioned programmatic, because that clearly is one of those interesting spaces. And I'm not sure if you'd see it as a hygiene factor a little bit more, but it feels like one of the things that clients want to tick around programmatic is certainty around transparency.
Yeah.
Is that a point of difference for your offering, do you think?
Yeah, well, we definitely don't. We're not here to arbitrage media. That's a key differentiator. We're also here to think about clients' data and where that sits. And a lot of clients are thinking about moving that data in-house. So that's a second differentiator. And then the third piece, right, is that whole, does the brand promise and the customer experience, as we join those things together, is programmatic a service that enhances the experience? And the answer is yes. And so within transparency, right, we look at sort of three things, and the three core things are like, what are the staff that you need to have true transparency? And you need a combination of data and technology. That in itself creates a difference. The second thing is the technology itself, having an incredible technology background and understanding all the technology. Technology is getting better and better, so the transparency is accelerating. But the third thing I think is most interesting about the transparency is blockchain technology. So when you think about what blockchain can do, it will actually deliver the ultimate transparent programmatic media.
And to be clear, we're not talking about cryptocurrency here. What we're talking about is the fact that with blockchain, you have the opportunity to have a permanent record of every stage of the process. So if you're a media owner, then you know exactly where chunks of your revenue came from along the way if you're displaying that advertising.
Yep.
And if you're a brand, you'll know exactly where your money was spent. And if there was arbitrage in the process, you know what happened there.
You know, and there's a clear record of it and a very historical record that can ultimately be proven. So,
and how far are we from actually that being a practical part of the ecosystem?
Yeah, I mean, we have a great example in the States at the moment, which is for AIA insurance. And what they've done is they've said, if your flight is 2 hours late, and the minute it is 2 hours late, we will pay you your flight out on that minute. Right? So you just got to think about how is that possible, right? And it's only possible through blockchain technology, because it had to be able to measure the weather and the flight, and yes, it was delayed, and then have the record of, you know, the customer, and then say, hey, here's the bank account, and pay it out within literally a second. And the only technology that can physically do that quickly is blockchain.
And when it comes to the digital advertising chain,
yeah,
do you need the whole industry to step together to move across to blockchain, or can it happen within portions of the industry?
I think it's both. I think I would love the whole industry to embrace it. It is going to be such a, you know, like the fact that it's going to make programmatic transparent, that's a great thing for everybody.
And how long do you think it will be before the very first ad is bought digitally in Australia using blockchain?
I'm sure it is probably like it's already happened. We're using more and more blockchain technologies. If we're using it to measure it already, it means that we're thereabouts to buy it as well.
And do you, maybe almost the last question around programmatic, do you think, is this issue around transparency, around sort of the retreat from arbitrage, is this now becoming a hygiene factor? Are we through the worst? You know, we had the Wild West and now we're through it and things are calming down, or your expression suggests that no, we're not through the worst.
I think, you know, when I talk to CMOs, there, you know, it comes down to those things like, do I have a hybrid model? Do I have half in-house, half out-house? But when you get down to it, it's like, do I understand where my data sits? And that has been sort of the single answer to, or sort of answer everything else behind it. If you then sort of think about what role then does content play? Because ultimately all forms of media will become programmatic. If I think the current stat, according to eMarketer, is that 73% of all media is now programmatic. So we don't have far to go before outdoor will join, you know, and then TV ultimately. So we're close. And so, yeah, we're heading in the right direction. But the good news is that, as you say, the Wild Wild West is on the table.
And speaking in practical terms with your in-house media agency, will this act as, or can the Monkees use this media agency to go up to a pitch and sort of say, we have a real full service offering?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're one team. It's, you know, like we have these brands because there's equity in the brands, right? But we are one team as Accenture Interactive. Yeah. And I think, do they sub into that offering if they want? Yes, absolutely.
And are you there yet with your media buying? Has that happened yet?
Yeah, so we offer it globally already. We offer it locally. We have local clients. We have the communications and media industry and financial services industry has sort of like been the core focus so far.
And do you tap into one of the global holding companies' buying deal when it comes to mainstream media buying, or are you literally doing it yourselves?
We do it ourselves, yeah. Yeah. And I guess the sort of the three offerings, if you like, has been, you know, we've already done programmatic consultancy for a long time, and we've also done the technology consulting and the technology implementation and the running of the technology behind the MarTech and the AdTech services. And so the third component that's been behind the launch is the actual physical saying to the market, we actually now can buy either from our side or what we ultimately want to do is for the client to own the data and do it in-house for them.
And I want to sort of move to diversity here, big topic in the industry at the moment, certainly came up a lot at Mumbrella 360 last week. There was an ad news cover that I think the Monkees created, I think it might have been the last edition, and a LinkedIn member, the question on the cover was how's Adland responding to the consultancies or something thereabouts. And a LinkedIn member responded and said, I guess not with diversity. And the cover was a lot of white women and men. Is this an issue that you guys face at Accenture, or do you think that's more of a representation of Adland in general?
I've never worked with a more diverse group of people. From a gender perspective, I know that the Monkees in particular have more females than they do males, which is great. And it's something that the industry in general is very conscious of. I'd say that what we're all trying to focus on is from sort of far more around the developers side of things. So when you hire a Salesforce developer or a Hybris developer from SAP, typically you're having to find a male developer, right, because that's how they've been trained. And so we're trying to reverse that as an industry. But from the creative strategy and front end, I don't see an issue.
And how about ethnicity?
Oh, like the most diverse. I don't think there's a single country, and this is not only within Accenture, but within Accenture Interactive that we don't have working with us. And it's a wonderful, wonderful place to work from an ethnicity point of view.
And also to answer that question that was on the cover of the magazine, how do you think Adland is responding to the consultancies? I know, you know, when Deloitte, you know, announced their sort of move in the play and PwC bought their stake in Thinkabell, there was sort of a lot of question of how this is going to play out. How do you think Adland's responding to it?
Well, the good news is they're acknowledging our strategy. So that's great. I think the where we're heading as a business is, you know, we're sort of focused on that whole brand promise and customer experience, right? And so you can, when I explain that, you sort of understand why we acquired the Monkees and why also they want to be a part of us. And it's that differentiated model that we're seeing that talent wants to come and join is because we can actually now offer an end-to-end service to a client. And it's not just, you know, through a creative agency or through a product and service design business like Fjord. It's actually truly, I can see a business outcome happen at the end of the project that we deliver.
So should the holding companies be scared of you?
I don't know. I think we're just focused on our strategy, right? That's the simple answer.
Come on, you must have a view whether they should be or not. Should they be nervous? Surely if you're doing your job right, they should be.
I think what we've seen is there's a huge amount of disruption in the industry, right? And if we see clients demanding for our services like, hey, we don't think this industry has been very transparent, and I don't see value in the growth of what I can see, which is now that 73% in programmatic media buying, then we sort of look at that and go, is that part of the end-to-end customer experience? Is that going to add value? That's why we're here.
And maybe last question for you, what's next?
We sort of tapped into it a little bit. The blockchain is a huge area of interest. I think you saw, it was about a month ago, the founder of Alibaba, his name eludes me for a second.
Jack Ma?
Yes, Jack Ma. So Jack sort of said, I'm not sure about cryptocurrency, but what I am sure about is blockchain. And I tend to agree with him. It's just, the fact that it can answer the transparency issue is incredible. So,
thank you so much, Michael. Thanks for joining us.
No worries. Thank you for having me. Thanks, Abigail. Thanks, Tim.
And that's all for this week. Thanks again to Michael for joining us, and we'll be back to do it all again next week. See ya.